Hi, welcome to our workshop today on making disciples on a college university campus near you. Something like that, I think, is the title. I want to talk to you about campus ministry, my own experience with campus ministry, and then what we're trying to create here in terms of campus mission is an initiative by the Nazarene Church out of the USA Canada office to try to network, collaborate, figure out how to bring people together who are trying to reach campuses, college campuses. So currently there's about, I'd say, a dozen Nazarene-sponsored campus ministry initiatives that are happening that we know of. I think there's more. We just don't know of some of them. So you may know of some things. But there's things like our ministry at the University of Cincinnati, Oklahoma, the 2-8 House, was recently sold, actually, but there's a history of campus ministry going on at Oklahoma University. Some of you may know Wes and Judy Meisner. They were kind of the pioneers of reaching secular state university campuses for the Nazarene Church. And actually, they went and helped plan and launch Destinations Cafe, a coffee house ministry in Lincoln, Nebraska, to University of Lincoln students. There's several coffee house models of campus ministry going on. There's Potter's House with Stephen Burma Prophet in Springfield, Missouri, at Missouri State University campus. There's the Bridge Cafe, Beaver Creek Nazarene Church at Wright State University. The way we're doing ministry in Cincinnati, some people think I own a coffee shop and it's that same model. It's actually slightly different. So I give you all a free bag of coffee. That's from Numa Coffee Roasters. So Numa, we launched this business as a way to help fund campus ministry. That's one of the most challenging things about campus ministry is how do you fund it? Yeah. How do you get somebody with a calling to reach a campus? Not a lot of churches can afford like paying someone to go do ministry somewhere that might not ever seem like it benefits your local church. That can be a tricky thing. Mostly parachurch organizations are doing campus ministry. There's a few hybrid organizations, and so my model is I work for the CCO, Coalition for Christian Outreach. They grew out of the Young Life movement in Pittsburgh back in the 60s. Basically, a bunch of youth pastors decided, Young Life thing, we need to do this for college students. So they created this thing they called the Coalition back then. They changed the name because that got politically confusing. But the Coalition for Christian Outreach, CCO, is based in Pittsburgh. So what they do is they create partnerships with a local church, or in my case, the district. So the Southwest Ohio District partnered with the CCO to create a staff position for me to do campus ministry at the University of Cincinnati, kind of be a missionary for the University of Cincinnati. I happen to love coffee and want to integrate coffee into every area of my life. So I hang out at a coffee shop. That's my main context for engaging students. Now we started a coffee roasting business. I have students who, you know, stamp these bags, who volunteer, who are part of that. Welcome, Latina Sarah.
Hello.
Great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. So the model I'm engaged with at the University of Cincinnati is not your coffee shop model, but I definitely use coffee. Mine is more a hybrid partner with a parachurch organization to fund a campus minister to do campus ministry. And so then that's what I'm doing in Cincinnati. So that's what this coffee kind of represents. One of my shameless plugs this whole week has been encouraging churches to consider if you're spending money, any amount of money on coffee for your congregation, consider using a coffee where the money would do kind of double duty and help support campus ministry as well as give you a really good fresh local roasted type of coffee. And so we're really excited about that story and about getting the new coffee out there in some churches so that that helps fund ministry. And eventually I'd love to see ways in which it helps to fund not just our ministry, but it could be a campus ministry funding initiative for various locations. So anyway, if you have more interest in that, let me know. We can talk more about coffee later. So campus mission now is our Nazarene initiative here in the USA and Canada to try to just catalyze more campus ministry, just to help churches, leaders, anybody that feels a call to reach a campus, help them figure out how to do that. What are the next steps to take and stuff like that. So on some level, this will be very kind of basic why campus ministry and like what might be some next steps. I think the meat and potatoes of what we'll do here together will be more Q&A. I want to hear about you, about why you're here. You obviously have some questions, you have some ideas, you have some thoughts, or you just have this itch or tickle that says, yeah, we ought to be doing something, but we don't know what to do kind of thing. So campus mission exists to, I'll search this from the video. So this is our website. Our new website is still under construction, so don't judge too harshly when you visit this. I just added the University of Oregon page. We have a new guy who's going to be on staff at Eugene First Church to do college young adult ministry. His name's Curtis. I tried to put that page, and it's supposed to be under the parent page of where we serve, but for some reason it's stuck out here on the cat. But anyway, don't judge the site too much, but this will be a good place to go because it's where we're going to really try to network and collaborate and funnel, you know, questions, ideas, all that. This will be the first time I've ever used a Google presentation straight from the cloud, so we'll see if it works. So three words really are kind of our key words of who Campus Mission is and what we're trying to do. First thing is to network, is that we just want to connect everybody. So I just got to have lunch with Ben here. Ben is engaged in a new ministry in Morgantown, West Virginia to WVU students. Ben and Bennett Bryles, students, Mount Vernon grads, who felt a calling to go and work with the district there and with a local church. And a lot of times you'll have a campus like West Virginia where there's sort of a, no other way to put it, a dying church, a church that is really struggling. We have one like this at Cincinnati, pretty close to the University of Cincinnati, about 15 people. Back in the heyday, it used to have a thriving ministry to college students and international students especially. But anyway, so I got to sit down with Ben and just talk about what they've done the past year. And so in just a moment, I want to give him an opportunity to share a little bit of that with you. That could be real helpful as here's someone who's in the midst of launching a new ministry, trying to figure it out. They've been basically exegeting the culture of the campus and the community for a year now. And let's, you know, hear like what's next and how, you know, just to get to know them. So part of the whole thing is just networking. Getting people together, getting them to at least know each other. Sometimes, you know, the best thing you can do to sort of develop and strategize and cast new vision is to figure out what's working other places. I mean, that's why we do conferences like this, right? We're learning from other people as we network together. So that's a big part of what we do. Our Facebook group is probably the most active, like, interact with each other. Hey, I'm wanting to do this on campus. Anybody got some ideas or whatever? So this is kind of our main conversational space. Campus Mission on Facebook. You can search that out and find that pretty easily. The second step then for us is how do we resource? How do we help churches? How do we help people who are actually engaged in campus ministry get the resources they need to engage students? And that doesn't necessarily look like, initially you think resource, you think, okay, tools, curriculum, you know, what books are you using, what DVD curriculum, what this or that. It could include that sort of stuff, but even bigger than that in terms of just people, resources, ideas, collaboration, partnership. Like we know we have some really good connections with InterVarsity in the Kansas City area. Excuse me, we've got some folks, Jeb Flynn, Rhiannon Gamboa, Kelsey Exline, there's maybe another person. There's four or five people who are on staff with InterVarsity who are, you know, connected in the Nazarene world. They were either at NTS or they're on staff at a Nazarene church or something like that. And so that's back to my model in Cincinnati with the CCO. It's a similar partnership with a parachurch organization that's doing campus ministry. For some places, that's going to be a good route to take. If we've got InterVarsity staff or CCO connections or whatever in a particular area, that could be our way to really resource
And the next step after resourcing, part of that is on the website we're going to have all these pathways kind of mapped out. Literally, like, these are the models of campus ministry that we're actively engaged in using. And so your church may decide, like, we want to do that coffee shop model. So who do we talk to? Who's doing that really well? Who's, you know, who's our resource person? You might have, you know, been there thinking about kind of the Celebrate Recovery model. On a lot of campuses, there's a lot of addiction, a lot of issues. There's a lot of students who need help in that sense. So having a recovery model kind of ministry approach, you know, could be very effective. So anyway, this will be our page on the website to kind of look at different pathways you might take to engage campus. And then, yeah, we want to engage. We want to just put action to the words. We want to, you know, get skin in the game and really engage students and figure out what that looks like. So that's kind of our overarching strategy for campus mission, to network, resource, and engage. I've already gotten some questions about, like, funding. Like, is there funding available? Somebody reached out to me to ask for money because they wanted to do something on their campus. And right now there's no funding beyond just what they're trying to do. They're sending me to PowCon 3 times this summer, so that takes a little bit of funding. You know, we're showing up at General Assembly next summer. We designed those new banners. We spent money on a website and this and that. There's, like, just enough funding to try to, you know, do something. But for right now, there's no funding in terms of if Ben decides, you know, hey, we want to, you know, start this new program, but we need money to, you know, buy food or do this. For right now, all the funding is going to have to come somewhere from the local environment, from a church that believes in what you're doing, gets involved, from your churches, from a district, those kind of things. The Nebraska district that started this Destinations Cafe, just crunching numbers in my head, they had to have spent close to $500,000, maybe more, to basically buy the property, rehab the building into a beautiful coffee shop. It's really awesome. I went there and hung out with Wes and Judy Meisner for 2 or 3 days when I first got called. Felt nudged into campus ministry. I went to hang out with our Nazarene gurus of campus ministry, and they were at the time in Lincoln launching this new thing. So they spent probably paying Wes's salary for 3 years or so, buying the property, all that. I mean, at least $500,000 that a district invested into campus ministry. Not every district's going to have that kind of money to do something like that. But sometimes districts do have money from the sale of a property or, you know, whatever, a donor that wants it to go a certain direction or something like that. So those are potential reasons. But anyway, funding is all going to have to be generated. That's one of the big challenges of campus ministry. We can talk about that later if you have more questions about that. Real quickly, I just want to go through, like, some people really like nuts and bolts and, like, hey, give me some notes to take and just, you know, 5 easy steps to, you know, win a campus to Christ. So this is my attempt at just giving you something like that. Campus Ministry 101. So identify, first of all, if you think, hey, here's a campus in our town, we want to reach this campus, okay? And I can send this presentation to anybody that wants it later. Identify your mission and vision, okay? What is it we really want to do? Who do we want to be on campus? And this is where exegeting the culture and spending time, you know, a year observing the campus, seeing what's already happened. I think it's important that we don't just come in and try to duplicate, reinvent the wheel, or do what somebody else is already doing better than we can do, or things like that. I think you really want to observe the campus, figure out what your resources are. You may have somebody in your church who works on staff at the university or the college. That happens a lot, where churches have people like, oh yeah, I teach a class over here, or I run the financial aid office, or I, you know, work in the cafeteria or the student center or something like that. So think about what your resources are, that kind of thing. Identify your mission and vision around those things. Build an effective student leadership team. So in Cincinnati, CCO uses the 3-12-70 model. And so since day one, for me in Cincinnati, this creates some problems. But for me, a successful year is if I'm actively discipling 10 or 12 students, meet with them weekly, praying with them, looking at scripture together, maybe reading a book together sometime. I mean, that's really success for me. And I came out of about 15 years of youth ministry where I tried to do youth ministry with, you know, all the bells and whistles and kind of let's do it big and let's attract and let's have hyped up, you know, events and things like that. I went into campus ministry thinking I'm going to do this much differently. I want to go deep with a few rather than just trying to do big events and stuff like that. So for some, this is the right approach. 3-12-7. Let's really invest and disciple in a small number of students and let that begin to sort of organically, you know, impact that next. So anyway, that's our model. Whether or not you do a 3-12-70 model or something else, student leadership is huge. You've got to find those students that you can really pour into and invest into, because I mean they're the ones who are going to kind of evangelize. They're the ones who, I can go and walk around campus, and I look kind of creepy walking around campus sometimes and trying to talk with students. This old guy, you know, whatever. My students who are in class, you know, with students all the time, they're interacting, they live in apartments, dorms, whatever kind of stuff. I mean, you really want to invest in students so they can do ministry. It's not sustainable to just have one Lone Ranger kind of person trying to do campus ministry. So you got to build a leadership team. Finding ministry partners. Again, this can look like, you know, churches that want to come together to support this ministry or make it happen. In my case, I raise support through the CCO. So part of my funding comes from the Nazarene Church, and then half of it is me raising support. So for me, ministry partners looks like, hey, people that want to invest and be part of that. That's kind of a whole different conversation, but I would say most campus ministers who are full-time on a campus, they're doing some level of fundraising and finding ministry partners. So that can be an important part. Research the campus, we talked about that a little bit. Prayer sounds obvious, but I have some serious kind of prayer effort going into, you know, God help us to see the campus as you see it, and where you're calling us to really make an investment. The next two things, acknowledge and adapt to multiple learning styles, and then multiple styles of contact. I think within the context of as you're doing campus ministry, you really have to pay attention to, okay, lots of different students learn lots of different ways, and we need to be sensitive to that. And then also, you can't depend on one method of, you know, I know some groups that are all about posting flyers everywhere, and that's their main method of communication. There's some groups that are all social media, and it's all just about, you know, Twitter, Instagram. And then there's a lot of groups that set up constantly. They're in certain parts of the campus where they engage students. Those are all great ways to engage students and meet students. And you have to have kind of a multiple array of those things and not just one. Be true to who and what you are. This goes back to the first thing, identify your mission and vision. Don't try to be something you're not. I've really struggled with, oh man, my ministry doesn't look like Crew, or it's not as big and successful as Navigators or University or something like that. And there's constantly this, I have to refocus and be like, that's not who I am, that's not who I'm trying to be. But there are times, you guys know this in ministry, where you get sucked into the models and those expectations, even if it's just your own head trash, you get sucked back into this like, oh wait, I got to do this to really be respected or to really look significant or to really prove to the district advisory board that I'm worth investing in or whatever those kind of things might be. But stay true to who you are and what God has called you to be there on the campus. Okay, so that's just a real quick look at some one-on-one kind of things, like some steps to take, how to get from point A to point B, if you're thinking, like, how can we engage a campus? Ben, do you mind? And you can sit there if you want. That's totally fine. We're close enough. This is a nice setting. I wanted Ben to just talk a little bit about their first kind of year, their experience at WVU. What are you learning? How's it going?
It's going well. We were brought, like you said, by the district. We were invited by the district to come and move into a neighborhood.
So that's something that, I guess, was really critical for us. We actually moved into a neighborhood and surrounded by rental properties that are inhabited mostly by college students. So it's like a party all the time, everywhere. But we've learned that we can't just stroll up onto someone's porch and ask them what their felt needs are, because they're going to say, we need more hours in the day to sleep, and we need easier access to alcohol. Preferably, we don't want to have to be 21 to get it. So we've learned that that's not going to work. So what we did instead was we decided to go as high up the ladder as we could, and we started doing interviews. We typed up a list of questions to ask these people. Like, we have an interview with the VP of Student Life. So the fact that this guy is willing to give us the time of day just because we asked via email, we're really thrilled about. So we just started doing these interviews with people, just in order to do our due diligence to find out what is the vision, what is the mission, who do we need to be, and how do we need to go about this ministry on campus. And we had an interview with the head of the counseling department, and she said, we have nowhere to funnel students who are addicted, and it's a retention issue at the university, because students who are addicted to drugs and alcohol and pornography will just leave. And she's received letters that have said, hey, we can't stay here because I have to deal with this addiction, so I have to go somewhere else. So she said, we want to start Celebrate Recovery. We just have, no one's come to us. No one has said we're interested in helping. So this happened literally last week. So I'm telling you this very lightly, and I'm not saying, hey, we found the answer. We've just scratched the surface. We have to go to another city to get training. We have to figure out if this is actually something that we can do. Is it in harmony with the Church of the Nazarene? Will the district allow us to do it? But then there's another prong of, what does it mean to be the church in the neighborhood? Because Celebrate Recovery is cool, but are we making disciples? You know, is it enough to say, okay, now you're not addicted to drugs, go and sin no more? But are we actually making disciples? Who will make disciples? And we're learning that that is incredibly difficult, simply because we aren't college students. And so, yeah, there's a lot of ongoing challenges. A lot of what Danielle talked about this morning in the plenary session about confusion and disorientation and doubt and thinking that you're not cut out for this, that is our life. I'm serious. It's just, we do not understand a lot of it, and it's just a constant state. So be aware. that's the life, I think, for a little bit, especially just starting with nothing is just, it's hard sometimes. So I think that's about it.
And the answer to your question,
I think it could be good. I think it could be a real discipleship. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, issues of addiction, recovery kind of stuff, and you mentioned a few of the sort of key ones. I mean, that there's a huge demographic on any university, any college campus, even commuter campus. I mean, anywhere there's human beings, there's, you know, this kind of stuff. I have a friend who just got, he's a CRU campus minister at UC, but he just is making transition to their regional office in Indianapolis, I think. One of his responsibilities is he's going to oversee CRU's, basically, their approach to porn addiction. Like, how are they going to really help students, wrestle with that particular addiction and stuff like that. So I just thought that was pretty cool. And he's got some great resources that eventually we'll put on our website, too, for folks. You know, because that is, you know, I've yet to be discipling a guy, you know, at the University of Cincinnati who's not struggling on some level, and girls as well. Yeah, so thanks. I wanted to ask also about, or just to say, it's probably up in the air still, I would say, Ben, in terms of, you know, are you guys going to end up planting a church? Kind of like, there's some groups there. Jay Height has hired someone at Shepherd to do some cool stuff around, like, missional community kind of planting groups around. I know they We talked about some stuff they were going to try to do around Ball State University or IU or some things like that in Indiana to try to engage, you know, college campuses through basically planting missional communities, you know, near those campuses or something. Or I think that's a real interesting model and idea that we'll see and hear more of. There's a group of Mount Vernon students who are moving into Cincinnati right now, and I'm working with them. They're setting up a coffee shop and basically an kind of a house church, missional community kind of thing, and they'll be engaging at least on some level with students at Xavier University because they're living in that community in that area. I also invited Latia and Sarah to join me today. So speaking of being disturbed and perplexed and tension, so the LGBT community and that conversation, you know, that was one of the things, one of the first big challenges, and I'd say just an ongoing challenge for me at the University of Cincinnati, is how do I, you know, engage students in that community? Because I'm part of a campus ministry house that welcomes and affirms. And so there's a mix of us in this campus ministry house, and between the three of us, there's three of us who are very welcoming and hospitable to the LGBT community, and there's one of us who is very affirming, and will do, you know, same-sex marriages and things like that. We have the leadership team for the LGBT Alliance student group on campus. Their leadership team meets at the campus ministry house where I've been doing some ministry over the past few years. And so engaging this community, figuring out as a church, like what does it look like? This has been very perplexing and challenging, and lots of gender issues. And I've recently developed a relationship with a student who, you know, no longer identifies with binary he/she pronouns, and that has just opened up a whole new world of me trying to figure out what does it look like to welcome, what does it look like to give space to someone to express their gender as well as their sexuality, you know, in different ways. So anyway, I wanted Latia and Sarah, because I noticed they weren't having their own workshop. I wanted to give them some space too to talk a little bit about who they are, and I mean, I think naturally just what you say will impact our conversation around campus ministry, because I honestly think you can't do university type ministry without, you know, engaging this issue and trying to figure out at least how you're going to posture yourself to this community. So if you don't mind, yeah, just share a little bit.
So our community right now as it stands is not, we don't have many college students, not that we wouldn't be, well, you know, open to that. But what we are conscious of is, again, we've moved into the community, so it's where we eat and sleep and do all our life. Big thing is language. So what we've said is that we're going to learn the language. So we're going to learn those buzzwords not to say, which one for us as Christians is homosexual, so we don't use it. We choose to use the language that the community gives us, which is LGBT. And that just opens that conversation. And also in our gatherings, whether we're just hanging out, having a coffee, or in our worship service, we say, hello, my name's Latia. I identify as she, her, and hers. So then that opens the space to say, this is a safe space where you can identify in the way that you choose to identify. And then we're really family-centered, because a lot of times if someone comes out, and especially in religious communities, their families kind of distance themselves. So we become that family, and that's our model of we have dinner and conversation. So sometimes that conversation around dinner is, hey, how are you? What was your week like? And sometimes the conversation is whatever the hot topic in the world is today concerning the LGBT community, and what is it that we think about it, and how do we, you know, process that is this community and be Nazarene. And it's been those tough questions, and we've created an open space where people feel free to say whatever. And sometimes we go, I didn't really need to know that, but okay. You know, those kind of things. That's where you are. And committing to journey. So we have a number of people that would identify as transgender in our community. And so we say, okay, journey with us. Let's figure out our relationship with God together. And in the same way that we could have relationship to say, hey, let's speak about whatever this is, whatever the issue is in life, they're going to call us on our crap too. So being open and realizing that they watch us as much as we are modeling together. So it's really a lived community and figuring out how that works. Sometimes that's Christmas and Thanksgiving spent at having dinner there because
opening our home.
Because holidays are tough.
No family relationship or can't get there or don't have family.
Or, you know, I grew up in the church, whether Nazarene or not, so I know what my church says to me about my orientation, but I still feel this way. I mean, we've had to deal with, unfortunately, people who have committed suicide over it. So we are very intentional so that I would rather that your life be spared than you feel like you have to fit a mold. So we work intentionally around that.
I also was thinking on a campus level. Mm-hmm. I know from my time in college, it's been almost 100 years ago, coming up, and actually about 15 really or so. It feels like 100. But I know that a lot of times campuses have groups or they have causes or they have things. Like I was in Habitat for Humanity, great organization. Or I did a lot of other different things, like going to the urban core and doing like service projects, et cetera, et cetera. And the LGBT community on campuses often have a lot of things that they are passionate about, either through educating or resourcing or an initiative for awareness, for example. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I think that there's a struggle with the church, like, well, if I support that, am I condoning what this group is doing? Like, there's a kind of tightrope feeling. However, what we've also done in our community is we've looked at if something is going on in one community, is it bad for one community or is it bad for all? So, for example, bullying. I don't think bullying really works for anybody, so that's something I can easily get behind. So if it's an anti-bullying initiative, I can support that, and I can be involved in that. Domestic violence, I don't think that works for anybody, so I can advocate against domestic violence.
We're all volunteers, trained volunteers with the, for us as KCAVP, but I would suggest that you look at your anti-violence project in your community. So we're all volunteers and able to talk about intimate partner violence and how that's not obviously a good thing and walk with people through those situations. We go to Pride. We show up because there are other voices there, and so we want to be an alternative voice that says we're here. And typically it's interesting because they see the church and the Nazarene and they go, huh? So it gives a lot of conversation for sure. I also work in an organization for people with disabilities and teaching life skills and a whole bunch of different things.
Independent living.
And so what I also do is I'm a facilitator in we have lots of different groups, like mental health group. And so we have one specifically for people who would identify as LGBT and live with a disability because they would experience stigma from both communities. And so having that open space to have those questions and places to come. So, and again, just being present when things happen on campus or in the community that's bad. We went to recently, unfortunately, a transgender woman got ran over and died. So they had a memorial service, and so we were present there to be God's people in that space, and had a number of conversations just of like, why is this okay? You know, those things. So it's really every day and every week looks different. And trying to, I can relate to the, I'm not sure I know what we're doing, but we're doing it anyway kind of thing.
Starting with nothing and sometimes feeling like you might still have nothing and just being creative. I lived in a creative access area for 2 years before I moved to Kansas City. And I'm so grateful for that experience because I've had to learn how to think out of the box a little bit. And I can truly say that the way God uses experiences, nothing ever comes back void. And I love that. I picked up karaoke while I was over there. And so that's really been a great ministry. And it's a conversation starter. Because if you try to go on poker night, no offense, I don't really play that anyway, but it's very serious. You can't get in to talk to anybody because they're focused on the game. Darts, I don't have good coordination, so I don't want to hurt anyone. And it just kind of depends on the atmosphere. But you get in karaoke, a little bit ago, they had a big contest, 11 weeks, so there was 11 singers. And I said, you know what? I thank God you want me to join this for a second. If I win cash money, it's going to the church. Cool. Right? But what was fabulous about getting into this is in years past, this is like a very catty and facetious contest. Like people are in it for like almost blood. And so we actually had a friendship going on, and out of 11 singers, I came in fourth. I made it just enough to be in the championship in the final round. And each week, it was like we're helping each other pick out songs. We're talking. We're getting into a relationship. And even the guy, the KJ or the DJ, he was like, I have never seen a contest like this in my life. What is going on? Like, you guys are friends. You're actually cheering each other on. And it was a way of just getting in there and being a part of someone's life. And I was like, thank you, God, for being fourth. That's pretty cool. Like, first contest ever, and you got me that far so I could build those bridges with your help. So, little things like that.
Creative. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys being here. We just did our first karaoke event this last semester.
Good stuff.
Huge hit. So now my student leaders are like, every semester we're going to have karaoke, you know, night or two nights or something like that.
So I really appreciate you joining us and talking, because I would say if you have any other questions, you want to engage that issue a little bit more with Latia and Sarah while they're here, please stop by and see them afterwards or at their table in front of the chapel. On the far right side as you go into the chapel. Well, thank you so much. I just really appreciate that, you know, here's a Nazarene church community courageous enough to sort of engage and figure out, for me, that the line between welcoming and affirming is that tricky territory that I try to, you know, and I feel like I'm a little bit off the grid in campus ministry. To some extent, I can get away with more. I can do whatever. I don't have, you know, a lot of church people necessarily looking over my back or DSs or whatever too much. But when I am raising support and then it becomes known to my supporters that I'm a part of a ministry house that is affirming to LGBT, that puts me in a situation where I have to, there are going to be some courageous decisions, I think, we've got to make here on where we're going to stand, or at least how we're going to posture ourselves, even when we stand on one side of the line or the other. There still ought to be a posture, I think, because I feel like we give a lot more grace to some other issues when people are struggling with other issues in life. We give a lot more grace to, hey, you know what, just journey with us and let's figure this out and you grow and, you know, the Holy Spirit, we'll trust the Holy Spirit to work in your life. However, in this issue, I don't know that we trust the Holy Spirit as much as we say we do.
We should.
Yeah, yeah.
For being grace is an awesome thing.
It really is. It really is. Well, at this is where I want to go into just kind of Q&A discussion. And Shane here is going to facilitate a little bit here. Hey, those are cool pictures. I lost my presentation. My presentation got hijacked by the administration here. They're like, ha ha ha, we're going to promote. Thanks, Shane. It may just be on a screensaver and we can. Cool. So, Shane, I'll let you take over. I'll rest my voice a little bit here. Here's some suggested questions, but definitely feel free to engage, interact, ask your own questions right here.
Facilitating is nothing more than making sure the conversation keeps going. So if you have questions, now's the time to ask.
Oh, why don't you guys confirm what I'm feeling? I think that would help me. I took over this church 2.5 years ago. And we're in a college community town, Delaware, Ohio Wesleyan University. We currently have zero outreach there, no presence at all. And so I'm just at the very beginning. I'm feeling God stirring in me. And I guess what I'm hearing is, let's not try to do that with our church people. Let's see if we can sponsor somebody to go in there and be a presence. Is that would you guys say that's accurate?
I think it would be cool if your church was missional in a way that said we will make this like a priority. Definitely, like sponsoring someone in a way that you cast vision for a person to be a point person.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
That's what I'm hearing.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Even if they are part of the congregation and sponsoring.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't seem like, and I probably knew this, but after listening, it's probably not the right thing to march a group of our church people in there and try to do something. We ought to be a presence, a consistent presence, and with more young.
You know, there's a lot of churches that show up, you know, as students are moving in to campus or something like that, and, you know, give out free water bottles and or just help students pack things into their rooms. Some campuses are closed, and you're not allowed to help and do that unless you're part of a registered team, which is the case in Cincinnati. Churches can't just show up and help with things like that. So a lot of that, it just depends on context. There are opportunities like that where I think a church could kind of show up and just give something away, just be nice. Sometimes it comes across as a bait and switch, you know, kind of thing. So I think you just have to be careful how you do it and just be sure it doesn't look like that as much as possible, you know, or whatever. So I think there are opportunities for churches to engage and get some other people on the campus occasionally. Maybe there's a ministry that needs a church. Yeah. It needs support. Yeah. We don't always have to just start our own thing and have the Nazarene name on it. Right. You know, we can come alongside of something that just needs an anchor sort of church, a healthy church to really support them. I really like the CCO model that I'm a part of. So the thought of a church saying, we believe in this so much, we're going to designate $20,000 towards a staff person to hire them through the CCO or somebody like that. And so that person's going to be trained, you know, for 5 weeks on campus ministry and how to raise support and things like that, so they can raise the other $20,000 or $30,000 that it takes to kind of sustain a person, a family, a marriage, or whatever. So I think to have a church that would make that sort of investment, to say, we believe in this so much, we'll do this. Because there's not often immediate return on investment for that sort of thing, but investing in college students who become leaders in some community, who believe in the local church, who've been a part of a church even at some level that has invested in them and invested in a ministry, I mean, that makes a good long-term impact. And so I've been doing it long enough now to see as students come through our ministry and they land, one guy got to Houston, Texas, and you know, wanted me to help him find a church, and he got a real good engineering position and started immediately splitting his tithe between, you know, supporting me and then supporting his new church kind of thing. I just say that to say, like, students come out of ministries really wanting to give back and understand how they've been formed and shaped by it. So I think it is, I think it's a both and. I think you need that point person. You need somebody who just really is going to be present, you know, on the campus. A lot of campus ministry is just being there, being in the right place at the right time. And to be there at the right time means you have to be there a lot of the time, or as much as possible. And so
sometimes bivocational kind of works like Ben's doing. I think there will come a point where Ben needs to not be working another job so that he can just really be present with students more, kind of thing.
Kind of along with that, I'm at Ashland, and so we've only been there a year and a half or so. Just my wife got a job there working in financial aid, and so my immediate thought was, well, got some connections, but now I'm just observing. We haven't been kind of doing a whole lot of research yet. Just kind of, we have one student who just started attending there this year, and don't really have a whole lot in the church itself that would just be going, oh, hey, let's do a campus ministry. But one of the things I'm wrestling with is that it's Brethren Church is kind of the hub there in mm-hmm. Ashland. And so there's Brethren churches all over. It's kind of like would be Mount Vernon. It's like, almost like if I were a Baptist church coming to Mount Vernon to try to you know, start a ministry to students. So do you come across that? I mean, how can we? I know there's opportunities to minister, but almost like the kind of thing, we don't want to feel like we're, you know, trying to press in where we might not want, you know, we might question our motives or whatever. Like the move-in day, that's the first thing I thought of. But like, well, they've already got a lot of things like that, so it's almost like we want to have a presence, but I'm not sure if we would be welcome or you know, how that would be received.
Yeah.
Do you run into that with those kind of universities? And it's not really a Christian, I mean, it's not like an opera, it's probably
yeah,
not a
yeah.
good comparison, but still, there's that reality.
Yeah, I got my MDiv from Ashland, from the seminary, which is a few blocks away from the main campus. So I'm familiar a little bit with Ashland. And a buddy of mine, Jake Blaisdell, is a CCO campus minister at Ashland. So there's a pretty large campus ministry thing going on. And they have this gathering called The Well. So sometimes you don't want to compete with something that's happening on campus that's really good for students. But those students all need, I think, they need a home church. They need to plug into a local church. We often talk about like the low-hanging fruit of campus ministry for us ought to be our Nazarene students who land at some of these universities, if we can figure out who they are and connect with them. But oftentimes we don't have a good system. Like the Baptists seem to do real well with, you know, the BSU campus ministers, especially in the South. Like they get a list of 1,000 names every year. Like, hey, all these Baptist kids are coming, you know, to your school. We don't have quite that system going yet, but we want to develop somehow by being a part of high school, you know, church camps in the summer and NYCs and things like that. We got to develop a system to help everybody know, like, hey, these three students, Nazarene students, are coming to Ashland, so let's reach out to them and make sure they know your church is, you know, a place to plug in our option. But again, so it might be that you come alongside and help support The Well, the student fellowship thing that's happening. Maybe they use churches occasionally, like, hey, tonight's meal is sponsored by Ashland Nazarene, kind of a thing. And also I think we just start small and do whatever it seems like, whatever door God is opening to connect with one person, one student. I mean, if that church was to somehow connect with one college student a year, you know, for 10 years, I bet that would be 9 times more college students discipled than the past 10 years. You know, that's true for most, I would say, small town Nazarene churches that, like you said, they're not necessarily gung-ho to like, hey, we should start a college ministry thing. So start small, you know, develop relationships. You know, as you come alongside and help a campus ministry on campus, there might be a Nazarene student who's like, oh man, you know, meets you and like, oh cool, I'll come check out your church and hang out. And then somebody takes someone to lunch after church, and they instantly have adopted grandparents for their college, you know, years. And I mean, those kind of things are great. I went to Anderson University, a Christian college north of Indianapolis, and I ended up going to Anderson First Church of the Nazarene, which is at the time was a large church, 500 or so. That was transformational for me to be a part of that local church.
during my freshman year of college. That's where I felt called into ministry. The youth pastor and his wife mentored me, Kevin and Jan Dunlop, and was part of a college young adult ministry. That was a nice mix. This is what churches, probably larger churches, if you've got any number of college young adults, 20-somethings, it's nice to get away from just college students and sometimes be a part of something that's a little more intergenerational, even if it's 20-something intergenerational and not just 18 to 22-year-old kind of stuff that you're used to. So I think all these things are things that churches have to offer. Sometimes you don't realize what you actually have to offer. It really is community, loving relationships, people that would really be willing to pour into a college student, you know, whether it's food or a place to nap or whatever.
Yeah, question.
I was thinking about something, kind of a comment. What are the churches not doing? Like, and I think timing is everything, because I think a lot of times we're so focused on, it's the beginning of the school year, yay. What about midterms or final exams? Mm-hmm. You know, and what about, what would college kids need at most of that time, or something like that? And when life starts to hit in, like, oh, wow, I'm not just a new student anymore, I miss my family, or something like that. Maybe you could sponsor like a midnight breakfast or a study party, or you know, provide a quiet place or something along that line. Because I think sometimes timing is everything, and we focus on the beginning, but those midpoints and endpoints are pretty serious too. And that might be encouragement. But yeah.
That's where the coffee comes in real handy for me. Late night lattes from midnight to 3 a.m. giving out lattes to students as they call it Hell Week in Cincinnati when it's the design art architecture planning school. It's the week before finals week, but they're all doing projects, literally staying up all night for several nights in a row. And we just show up and just our students make vanilla lattes and hot chocolates and chais and just give them out hand over fist.
You mentioned the low hanging fruit being our kids that grew up in our churches. I read a lot about, you know, a kid that's come through church and really has never grappled with the intellectual side of the faith. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all been warm and fuzzy and community-based, and they get to a university, and all of a sudden they're confronted with people that don't share that, and the intellectual side hammers away at them. Do you find it necessary to, I know the word apologetics isn't a popular word, but do you come at some way of undergirding the intellectual foundation of our faith? Is that part of what you do?
Definitely. I usually always do with my students in our fellowship time, one of my first things in the fall will be some sort of science and faith kind of discussion, which really sort of gets at worldview and you know, some things like that. I was telling Ben earlier, he's going to the West Virginia youth camp here sometime this summer, and I've tried this on our district as well, to show up at an NY event and basically do a college transition seminar, trying to help those seniors, especially if they're going to non-Nazarene, non-Christian universities, do a little bit of some talk and dialogue, basically on like those issues of worldview and ideas you're going to encounter, and like, are you prepared for that? Why do we believe what we believe? How do we read the Bible? One of the things I'm passionate about too is helping. So I feel like, and I'm right in the backyard at the Creation Museum. But I feel like we give our Christian kids sometimes such a narrow view of how science and faith interact that as soon as they encounter an idea that falls outside of the scope of what we think is Orthodox Christianity, then they are faced with that decision. Either I have to give up my faith to be an engineer, to be a, you know, biology major, or this or that, or I've got to change my major and go to ministry, or I've got to just compartmentalize and not think about it, or something like that. And so I do a good bit of my faith in science talk is that, you know what, this idea of creation and science and evolution, some of these sort of things, there's a broader spectrum of Orthodox Christian positions on this that you might not be aware of. Don't feel like you have to walk away from your faith just because you encounter something that doesn't agree with what you learned in church or at home. That can be tricky, and I try not to do that in such a way that it really prematurely causes problems. But but I feel like, you know, it's a little bit of that controlled burn, you know, where you want to burn out a section of forest here before, you know, there's room for a forest fire.
That's a good one.
So I feel like it's a little, I'd rather control this conversation a little bit, talk about this, help them know. And I've had lots of students who are like, oh my goodness, thank you so much. I really wasn't sure how I was going to be able to stay a Christian and take these classes and be, you know, in my major or whatever. So I think that's huge. I think we need to do more in terms of college transition and sort of thoughtful, you know, how is your faith going to stand up in this environment? So I think that's pretty critical that, youth ministries need to be thinking more about not just how we do a good grad Sunday, but for that whole year, their last year, you know, although most of them, some of them have left even before that, but in that last year, that could be a way to really engage, you know, high schoolers, juniors and seniors, is to really engage in serious topics and conversations so that they understand that faith is relevant, that it can be integrated completely. There is nothing, that should shatter, you know, a student's faith, honestly, because there's no new problems or no new arguments.
Do you have any experience with Ratio Christi?
No.
Okay. I don't either, but it's been introduced. It's a ministry to college students on the intellectual basis. Ratio Christi, the rational for Christ. I think Ravi Zacharias supportive of it. And just didn't know, just looking for an opinion on the resources.
Yeah, I will check that out. I'm familiar with William Lane Craig's Reasonable Faith. He has like chapters, university sort of chapters. And it's sort of that idea, it's that, you know, faith is reasonable, that there is some logic and some arguments and some... Now again, that some people would say that borders, that gets too much into like apologetics and trying to debate and things like that, which is
not... That's what I don't know.
Yeah. Knowing Ravi Zacharias, though, I would think that's a great resource. Mm-hmm. So...
Have you utilized Alpha in campus ministry?
You know what? The director of Alpha USA Canada for campus ministry said, "Ooh, that's good." Came to one of our CCO training events in Pittsburgh one time, and basically trained us on Alpha's kind of approach to evangelism and stuff like that. And we never really engaged with it or took it. The semester I tried, this was probably early on in my ministry at UC, and I was really struggling to get a consistent group of students to show up at our weekly fellowship kind of thing. And so I think when I tried that, I just didn't have enough relational equity with enough students to sort of engage it. So I wouldn't really be able to tell you how it went or whatever, but
they just came out with a new video series geared toward youth and college age. That's a free resource. It's something I've done Alpha at another church, the old version, and I've always wanted something that's a little newer and current.
Yeah.
And I really like how it looks. I haven't used it yet, but I'm just curious if you've heard of it.
I need to revisit that, and that's a great...
Really good,
idea. I appreciate that. That could be something for our resource page to put on the website. Because we're going to do a conversation cafe at the coffee shop, a late night after hours, Tuesday nights. It's geared around like the ultimate questions of life sort of thing, like philosophy, faith, just the big question kind of thing. So it won't be presented as like a Bible study for students, but it'll just be, hey, on Tuesday nights, we're going to talk about the big questions, which I think is a little bit of an alpha sort of approach.
It is. It's more of an apologetic kind of thing, but it looks like it's really presented in a good way that we really track with
people. The attractive thing about alpha is it builds community.
Uh-huh.
It starts with the meal, and it's so low key. Each one of those, that's an acronym. I can't remember what each one is, but one of them is laugh. Another is, I can't remember which letter, but there are no dumb questions.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a place to ask good questions and seek. So,
years,
it's a tremendous thing.
I talked about 30 minutes the other day with a Hindu student. I noticed she was just eating these almonds and drinking water. And I was just curious, but all I said was, oh, I love almonds. Can I trade you a cappuccino for some almonds or something like that? And we got into it. She said, oh, this is my favorite, my favorite deity's birthday is today, a Hindu deity named Shiva. It was just, part of me was like, what? Wow, my goodness. Even after being on a university campus, I still have conversations sometimes that take me off. Get me off balance a little bit. This is your favorite deity. I expect you to be like a World of Warcraft gamer or something like that. We had this great conversation, and she was so just thoughtful and friendly and like sharing things that she was passionate about and faith. And anyway, so I invited her. I said, hey, in the fall, we're going to do this conversation thing where we're kind of, from various faith perspectives, but we're dealing with big questions. And it'd be cool to have, if you ever want to talk a little bit about whatever. And some people would be nervous about that. Why are you giving somebody a platform to kind of promote? But I think it's more about we're just making space for students to engage in spiritual conversations, things they want to talk about, address big questions. And because who knows what could come? I might not be able to evangelize her or whatever. And that's another thing I've had to just get away from. Like, conversation relationships are not about me, getting evangelistic notches in my belt, man. It's about me just loving people, appreciating this person's made in the image of God, and I could actually learn something from them. So I think that's important.